Now the car show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
And a good Saturday morning to you, one and all. This is your Saturday morning car show with me, Lisa Christensen, here in Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800 AM. I'm a licensed automotive technician, master certified ASC, fixing up your car like we do every week here on the CJAD Car Show. So get in line, 514-790-0800. 514-790-0800 puts you in the driver's seat this morning here on the CJD Car Show. Big shout out to Laura. He listens to the CJD Car Show. Got himself a Dodge Ram pick-em-up truck. I'm not a Dodge girl, but he's not a bad guy. So good morning to Laura. I wanted to talk about an interest, something that's been, it comes up in like spurts in the garage business. We see like a influx and then it's gone for a while and then it's an influx and it's gone for a while. And I guess it depends on the time of the year as well, but I am not a tire specialist by any means. Let me put that disclaimer out right out. But when you're a generalist in a garage and you work on everything, you know, you don't care what the emblem is on the car. You don't care what the system is on the car. You will inspect, you'll maintain, you'll work on, tires. Tires are very interesting little pieces of rubber. They have such an important role in keeping you safe and the handling of your car and the functionality of your car. And they are probably one of the most forgotten things that we look at on a car. That and wiper blades, of course. But interesting when cars, you know, people bring in tires because, you know, let's be honest, tires are expensive. And they bring in some tires and say, hey, I want to put these on the car. And, you know, you can tell right away when you pick up a tire, you can feel it. Then when you examine it, you can see. And what I'm talking about are tires that have been, you know, left out in the sun. Maybe they were in a scrapyard on a rack, beaten down by UV every day. Maybe they were in a garage sale you picked up. Maybe you bought them online because you're trying to save some money and keep your car going. But when you see tires with hairline cracks throughout the treads, because one of the biggest arguments when we tell people the tire is no good, they say there's tons of tread left. What are you talking about? You're just trying to rip me off. But then you try and explain to them and you show them, do you see all these little micro cracks throughout the treads along the sidewalls? The tire is finished. And there are people that will go, okay. And then you're going to get the other people that want you to install them anyway. And they don't realize you got four air chambers on your car that when one of them blows out, you can, if you're driving at the correct speed for the accident to happen, well, blowing out of a tire is really disorienting. If it's never happened to you, it happened to me on a highway. I had someone, a truck was carrying scrap in front of me and dropped something. And it blew out two tires on the side of the car. And the lack of control, instantaneous, you have to be really on the ball at a normal driving speed to maintain control. So when it comes to tires, you have to first think about what's your goal with a tire. Are you just, you know, a regular person driving to work and back, the occasional vacation? Are you a person that goes off-road, country place? Are you up, are you in areas where, you know, the roads aren't always the best? I don't know what you call a macadam road anymore, with no sidewalks or borders, and you have just a shoulder that you can end up on. I don't know if you ever see a lot of roads have all that debris on the shoulders. And a lot of time people swerve into that. And you better have good solid tires and not worn out tires if you go into debris like that, because you never know what you're driving into. So then the question up comes next is, well, how long should the tire last? And that is so depending on you, the driver, the type of tire. I mean, there's so much that goes on. So usually around 2 millimeters. Now, if you look at 2 millimeters, that's not a lot of tread. Just imagine trying to have adhesion to the road in rain. But technically, 2 millimeters, that's what they say is discard. No way am I ever driving on a car tire that is at 2 millimeters. Absolutely not. But the going average is about 6 years. for a tire. But then again, like I said, it's really what you're doing with it, okay? It depends on your driving style, the design of the tread of the tire, the climate you're driving in, our road conditions, and how often do you use the car. Just like you, the vehicle, it's the essential role in car maintenance is really to pay attention to those tires. And it's not washing the sidewalls to get all the brown stuff off, which actually is important to your tires, okay? You want to maintain the life of your tires? Well, the first thing you should do is, honestly, it's tire pressure. It's wheel balancing. It's wheel alignment. It's making sure that the tires you're using fit the use that you're using. And then the question is, well, how do I know if that tire is expired? Because yes, tires do have an expiration date on every single tire. So what you want to look for is that DOT number that's on a tire, okay? Because the DOT with the four digits afterward will tell you the first two are the week, like the 25th week of 89. That will tell you that those four digits, how to read it. And if you miss that, you can Google how to read a tire, DOT on the sidewall of your tire. You can find out how old the tire is. Because I get questions from people that are buying tires from either a big box chain store or they're buying tires that are at the end. Oh, look, it's a liquidation sale. But if you understand how to read that number when you go shopping for a tire that's discontinued because you want a deal, how old is that tire? Because, yeah, you're getting a deal. But if the tire is already 3-4 years old and you're an occasional driver or you're a driver that's not going to put a lot of mileage on, and again, storage of the tire, wear of the tire, usage of the tire, are you really getting a deal when you're buying a brand new tire? Because you can get tires at all different prices. You should be checking to see, is the brand new tire that I'm paying for really a this year brand new tire, or is it already 3 years old? Now, tire shops, they have constant circulation of their tires. They're getting new stuff in. I'm less worried about that. I'm more worried about people that are so focused on buying off the internet or buying from foreign countries or, you know what, shopping local, you have local also service. So just keep that in the back of your mind. But you should really be focused on how old are the tires? Do I have? You can see it. You, as a person, you just pick up that tire and you can look at it yourself. You're not a mechanic. Why are there so many little cracks in the tire? The treads are good. Question yourself, is this still good? Now you know you can go and look on the sidewall of the tire, the DOT number, at the four digits, and you can see the week that it was built and the year is it built. And does it fall within that 6 year? But if it's all micro cracked, well, you see, now you can't say 6 years because the micro cracks are telling us that that tire is no longer good. And you really want to be sure that you have a safe driving experience, good handling on the road. You want to know that if you go through rainy conditions, you have good adhesion to the road. If you need to make a good stop, that your tires are not going to aquaplane. You're not going to go sliding through different weather conditions. The contact surface between your tires and the road are about the size of the palm of your hand. And when you're moving, that's a very small surface. You want to make sure that you have good adhesion to the road and that your risk of a blowing out of a tire is at a minimum. It's responsible and it's a good way to drive. And it's also will save you money in the long run because you are paying attention to the investment that you put into those tires. So let's go. 514-790-0800. Let's talk about your car. How is your car's week? 514-790-0800.
This is The Car Show on CJAD 800.
1021 CJD time. It's time to go back to the phone lines here on the CJD Car Show at 514-790-0800. But before I do, I just want to clarify, my discussion about the DOT number on a sidewall of a tire. I talk about four digits. I mean the four last digits because obviously there's like, I think 11 numbers, alphanumeric numbers for the DOT number. I'm speaking specifically about the last four digits, the two for the week, the two for the year at the very end of the code. So just make sure, because everybody's going to run outside and check their tires because you're good, you're listening well. But just it's the last four digits. So let's go to the phone lines now. We are going to speak to Brian this morning. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Creed. Lisa, how are you doing?
I'm very good, sir. Tell me about your car.
Okay, I've got a 2015 Fiat 500 Sport. I don't drive it in the winter.
Okay.
It's just about to turn 91,000 kilometers.
It's not electric, right?
No, it's not electric. I wish. Maybe one day. I don't know. They discontinued them in Canada. It's unfortunate. But anyways, I'll get to the point. I had a wheel bearing go bad. It sounded like it was coming from the right side at the rear, but it turns out it was the left one. Mm-hmm. I had it put on, the new one put on. They were trying to sell me one that was like $450, and then there was another one that was $209. I obviously opted for the $209 one.
Yeah.
Apparently, I know wheel bearings are important because, I mean, they support the whole car, right?
Yes,
so,
sir.
I have really bad buyer's remorse now. Should I have got the $450 one?
Well, I think... Well, it's really important because, you know, there are a lot of people at home listening right now that are probably in the same boat when it comes to decision making about, you know, it's like when you went to buy the car. Do you buy the car with this option or that option, right? And you're thinking about it cost-wise and longevity-wise. So, you know, wheel bearings, they're made all over the world. And we want a wheel bearing that has a good warranty attached to it. Do you know the difference in warranty between part one and part two?
They both have exactly the same warranty, Lisa.
Okay, so
2 years.
2 years, parts and labor?
Well, I don't know with the labor, but I know it was for the part. It was guaranteed for 2 years.
Okay.
And the other concern I had is I watched the mechanic put it on, and apparently you're supposed to torque that thing on.
Absolutely.
Right? He put it on with the impact, and I questioned him about that, and he said, the impact he was using was okay for that, or was like he knew the torque of the impact or something. I don't know. But anyways, I was a bit concerned about that. I don't trust any of these goons, man.
Whoa. I'm a goon, okay? Whoa.
Sorry.
No. You know what it is? Is that you have done a lot of... You get, how do I say it? It's because I've worked in some of the worst garages you could ever imagine. You wouldn't send, you know, a seasoned mechanic to work in some of these places. And then I was just a young girl working in them. And I've never worked for a dealer. Let's put that out there. I've never worked for a dealer, so I can't talk about how dealers work. But I worked in the aftermarket and many shops over 20 years I worked in. Mm-hmm. And I was such a pain in the butt for any employer because I took the time to torque things. And as you grow older, if you maintain a standard for yourself as a technician, because I don't want to say just a mechanic, because like you say, you get the impression of a goon. So I kept that mentality that there are things, Lisa, that you can change in the industry and things you can't. And one of the things that I can change is taking that time. Yeah, I can, you know, I can snug it up with my impact gun, but at that final where you need to tighten it, I want to tighten it. And I want to tighten it right because there is a load pressure. If you go onto the company's manufacturer site, they will tell you that you torque the nut, and there's some of those nuts, the little, there's the spline nuts have to be replaced when you when you do these things. So, but how are you, the consumer, supposed to know that?
That's right.
You don't.
That's right.
So you have to take it. So in your case, you have a 2 year warranty on the part. You have. You should ask about what's the warranty on the labor, because I think here in Quebec it's 3 months for 5,000 kilometers.
Okay.
And if I'm not mistaken, CAA members, they get double that when they go to a CAA-approved garage. Again, that's something that has to be checked. But you're at the point where it's done, and you know what it sounds like when it's not good, and you're going to drive the car.
Like, I mean, it was humming along.
It's like, humming along like an airplane taking off.
What was that? Like, what's that? I thought it was in my exhaust, but I Googled it. I scooped it out myself, and the mechanic confirmed it. I mean, he says, it's the wheel bearing.
So I think in your case, look, you've got a guarantee for 2 years, and you drive the car sporadically. You're going to have no problem, I don't think, with this car. And if you have a problem with the bearing in 2 years, well, then you know that you have a warranty on it. So keep the bill, and just put down on the bill that you know, not torque to manufacturer spec, using an impact gun, because the manufacturer of the bearing, when you have to send back a part, sometimes they'll credit you later, not sooner, and it comes back because the part was not installed correctly. It happens. So. Is it not incorrectly? Well, it was put on with an impact gun, which I'm not a fan of. It's tight. It's not going to come off. And the load pressure on the bearing, well, who knows, because it wasn't torqued, but you have a guarantee for 2 years. Good luck. Thank you so much for the call. I guess we lost him there. Okay. Well, he heard the end of that statement. That's good. So for people listening at home, very interesting case that can apply to a lot of you out there listening. Let's go take another call here at 514-790-0800 and speak to Bernard. Hi, Bernard.
Hello, Lisa. I love your show.
Thank you, sir. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm driving a 2007 Nissan Sentra.
Okay.
It's in pretty good shape.
Yeah, they're really popular cars.
But I'm starting to develop some rust around, especially the front wheel wells, and I'd like to have a garage that can take care of that before it becomes a real problem.
Okay.
I live in the southwest, but also, like, I'm open to Verdun, Lachine, LaSalle, mm-hmm, Doval, mm-hmm, even NDG, mm-hmm, for example. So would you have any place that I can go to that can...
When it comes to body work, I really don't recommend anybody specifically, because it's really like, you know, today the temperature outside is this and the paint goes on like that. So I think what you might want to do is look around and see, you know, some of the shops in your area that you deal with, and, or okay, ask them, you know, some of your coworkers if they've had body work done, where they went. Because okay, once you have rust, you have to understand you're going to clean it. You're going to you know, blend in the paint to go with it, but you have to rust treat it. And the real reason is what happened around the wheel wells. Would it stone chips that we're not taking care of as we drive our vehicle, or is it rust coming from the inside that's pushing out bubble wise? It's bubbles coming out.
Yeah, it looks like it's starting to come out from the inside.
So you can get the rust done, but you already have the cancer on the car. So now our goal is to slow it down. So we want to do that, and then to do that, you really need to have a good rust proofing done to the car. After everything is done and your paint is gone, then you can go ahead and have, when they do the rust work, whoever you decide, you can have them rust proof that area right away. But then your car really needs to be rust proofed and regularly every year, depending on what kind of you choose. But make sure you choose a product that sweats, that has some kind of grease and oil base that moves, because now that it's in there, you want to get everything as a soak. And through the summer, it will sweat. It will move. And you just take a soft cloth and you wipe it off around the door edges where you may be getting in and out. But really, you're going to have to be religious and tight on your rust proofing if you want to, you know, keep that car running long. But rust around the wheel wells, definitely get it taken care of. Get it cut out. Get it redone. And then rust treat the areas and then have the car absolutely rust proofed.
Okay, then.
I'm sorry, I don't have a specific recommendation, but I really like when people have that conversation about garages or repair work with coworkers, because it's like, ladies, with our hair, if we have a bad hairdresser, everybody's going to know about it. But you got a good one, then you're going to hear good, positive things. So people will talk about the good experiences and the bad, and that will help you to better choose how to maintain your car.
Okay, thanks very much.
Good luck, Bernard. Thank you very much for the call. 514-790-0800. It is 10:30 CGAD time, and it's time to head over for a CTV News update with Don Kagan Fleming.
You're listening to The Car Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
10:37 CJAD time. Time to get in on the CJAD Car Show at 514-790-0800. 514-790-0800 puts you in the driver's seat if you give me a call right now. Let's go and speak to our next caller, Patrick. Hi, Patrick.
Hi.
Tell me about your 2017 Hyundai Elantra.
Right.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Yeah, I've had it for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. I bought it used, had no issues with it at all. On Thursday, I was coming back from doing some cross-border shopping. I had my cruise control on. I was slightly under 100 K per hour.
Okay.
And you remember that was the day we had some rain. It started coming down pretty hard. I was on the stretch on the 15 North. And I started coming to a little bit of a hill, not much of a hill. It's got a little rise.
Line. Yeah.
All of a sudden, I could hear my engine rev up, you know, to maintain the speed, because I'm going up a bit of an incline, and the check engine light came on.
Okay. So did you have it checked?
Sorry?
Did you have the car checked?
No, because what happened was I said, why is it doing this when I'm going up the hill? Up to that time, even though it was raining, I had no kind of nothing happened with the car. And so I took off the cruise control, I canceled it, and the check engine light went off.
Okay, so have you had the car checked since then?
No, not since then. And I actually put the cruise control back on when it stopped raining, and now it was dry, the road I was on, and it didn't come back on. So could it have happened because of the being on cruise control and going up an incline when it was raining?
Absolutely not. There's a problem with the car.
Okay.
So you need to have the car scanned. with with diagnostic tool. They are going to do a generic scan where they're going to look at all the codes on the car. They're going to print out or write out all the codes. And this is what you need to ask for. You want to know what the numbers of the codes are. I'm just going to give you a random code, P0300 as an example. Mm-hmm. So you want that written on the bill. And then you want to know what's the generic description. And in that case, a P0300 is a random misfire. So you need that information, because what you want is you want that detailed on the bill. And you also want to make sure you ask for any freeze frame data. Because the freeze frame data will let the technician also know, even though you're saying it was going up a hill, it was in the rain, it was this and that, but it gives us the data of what the sensors were reading. The priority sensors at the time, they'll know the speed of the vehicle electrically. They'll know the throttle percent electrically. They'll know injection pulse time. They'll have all those parameters, and that's important when they go to recheck the car. So after they've got all this information, then they can go ahead and erase all the codes, or how many codes, or one code. And if there's only the one code in for something that would be related to the speed of the vehicle, and I want to be clear about that, because you could have something with vehicle speed sensor, and you could have something with a transmission, and you need to, whatever would affect the vehicle speed would be part of your cruise control. Throttle angle, things like that. Maybe let's just give you a crazy one here. Tires are worn out on the car. So the tires are spinning and the car is trying to maintain a speed, but it's not able to do that because, so it says, look, the range that I'm operating in, I've exceeded that range. Therefore, I'm going to let the driver know by putting the check engine light on that this system cannot do what it's supposed to do. Making that very general for you to understand. Right. So it could be simple as four bald tires, but obviously I'm quite pretty sure, confident to say it's not four bald tires. But this has to be checked with a mechanic. They have to take a look at the codes. And then from there, we can go ahead and say, what's our next diagnostic step? If there's a bunch of codes in memory, what I usually like to do is I like to group them as far as the customer complaint goes. And then I can maybe do a quick verification on a certain circuit. But other than that, what we usually do is we tell you to go ahead and take the car. We've taken the codes we need, the information we need. Next time it's raining, if you can go up a hill and for 2 minutes, you know, in the same idea that we're set to see if it comes back, that would greatly help us out to focus and zero in on a intermittent problem versus something that's there all the time you drive the car.
Right. Okay.
All right, Trent.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Patrick. Bye-bye. 514-790-0800. Let's go see what Dee has to say about, what year is your Buick Allure?
I'm sorry, Lisa. I really don't know. It's very old. At least 15 years.
Okay.
Okay, the problem being is that it started chugging, and when I parked it, the smell was horrific. It turns out that I have a six-cylinder car. Only four of them are working correctly. So the cylinder 3.6, it's had over 8,000 misfires, and apparently this affects the catalytic converter.
Absolutely.
So if you could explain all of this to me, I would really appreciate it.
Okay, so before I go into the big details, has the car been repaired?
No.
And you're not driving the car?
Oh, my God, no.
Because, you know, I don't know if anybody knows what it's like to drive a six-cylinder and have two not working right. It's just a horrible, shaky, rattly situation. So all that unburned gas, or the gas that's not being burned correctly in the combustion chamber of the cylinders that are not functioning properly, is now being dumped into a hot exhaust system and is going into your catalytic converter. A catalytic converter's job is to take the burned exhaust gases and use the metals, the precious metals that are inside a catalytic converter, to transform that pollution into something else, something cleaner to come out the tailpipe. And what happens is, when my mixture is incorrect, and that could be caused from misfires, antifreeze that's burning through the system, oil that's burning through your system. A lot of times people put all these products in their gas tank. Everything you stuff down your face always comes out in the end, right?
Okay.
Well, it's the same thing. If you eat bad food, your stomach's going to tell you about it, and the back end of you is not going to be happy. So your stomach is kind of like your catalytic converter. So if the catalytic converter runs too long, improperly mixture-wise, it can melt down the inside. It can block. It can deteriorate the either the glass pack or the bedding that's in there, and then you can get a rattle, which means the catalytic converter is defective, and you're looking anywhere from 600 to all the way up. You have an older car, so yeah. I'm saying anywhere around $6,000 to about $1,000 for a catalytic converter. But what bothers me most about catalytic converters is that people, you know, get a quote, oh, you need a new catalytic converter. So they pay for it. But the question is, why did the catalytic converter go defective? A catalytic converter does not go defective for zero reason. Something happened to that catalytic converter. In your case, your engine is running improperly. You need to find out what's wrong with that, whether it's electrical, whether it's valves, whatever the problem is, that has to be taken care of because you can't drive the car like that and you're going to make the problem only worse.
So just changing the, getting a new cylinder, the new 3.6 cylinder isn't going to be sufficient?
No, because you're thinking about changing a cylinder. You need to find out what they're changing. Are they changing a spark plug? Are they changing a wire system? Are they changing coils?
No, it's the ignition coil. Well, he said ignition coil, and then he said it was the 3.6 cylinder, one of the
That's it. So he's changing the ignition coil, which would...
Well, I'm confused between ignition coil and cylinder because it was kind of used interchangeably.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you, he's talking about what the ignition coil is used for, the spark of those cylinders to spark them. And that's why he's you know, you're picking it up because you're under stress, but it's really an ignition coil that it would be replaced to change the spark, fix the spark problem for the two cylinders that are being affected by it. And Dia, I hope that helps you out to understand a little more. Ask your questions. Go ahead and make them be able to answer it so that you understand. Good. 1045, CJAD time.
Now the car show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
1051, CJAD time. And it's back to the phone lines we go this morning here on the CJAD car show. We're going to go and speak to Kirk. Hi, Kirk.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good, sir. Tell us what you drive.
Well, I'm a truck driver.
Yeah.
I drive a Kenworth. But I was going to say the truck industry and the automotive industry, they're using wire now that's either copper-coated steel or aluminum.
Yeah.
And it's more prone to fatigue and corrosion.
Mm-hmm.
And that can trip a lot of sensors, like especially when you get into a damp situation or whatever.
Yes.
It can cause, you know, things to light up on the dashboard and... I mean, I've seen a truck, the whole dash light up like a Christmas tree because, you know, the moisture just got in there and wreaked havoc on everything.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in the 70s, you know, Chevrolet Malibu was a great example of an old car that had all aluminum wiring that went through the trunk. And, you know, after years of putting your stuff in and out, those wires got damaged. And then back then it was like, how do you fix do you weld? How do you solder these kind of wires? And even still, you know, we're talking about the change of industry for, you know, for people listening at home, they're not going to be looking at these things, but we're trying to build cars more eco-friendly. We're trying to make them so that you can recycle, and we're trying to make them as light as possible so that you can get the best fuel economy out of them. But, you know, we have to look at the long run. And, you know, Mr. Truck Driver there, you've got a lot of technology behind the dash of a heavy vehicle that people just don't understand. And the same thing with regular passenger cars. So, yeah, I agree. Now we're also wrapping these wires with soy products that mice love.
Exactly. But what I was going to say, too, is like my truck I drive right now, it's a 2019, and it's got almost the same technology as you, if you bought like an Acura or a Lexus or something.
Yes.
Like I have the what's it called? The adaptive cruise control.
Mm-hmm.
It can put the brakes on when it wants to.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like I don't,
almost could go to sleep and wake up in Florida.
Pretty much.
Almost.
You know, that's how they're getting. And it's going to even get more and more as it goes.
Yeah.
But the problem is like our mechanics at my work, they say corrosion is their number one issue, you know, corrosion because the wire cracked or water got in past where the plug is or, and they're constantly chasing those problems.
And what's interesting is that as a technician, you know, we have to cross industry work. And what I mean by that is that we had the issue with the Toyota Highlanders with the aluminum wiring and the module underneath with the high tension cables corroding.
Mm-hmm.
So I spoke to a construction electrician who told, I said, how do you preserve wires that are outside the house? And they use, it's corrosive. It's not a great product for people to play with, but that's how they preserve the integrity of the wires. Are we going to see, mechanics having to use these products to keep the preventative maintenance going on vehicles so that we can get a long lifespan and stop changing every 3 to 5 years these vehicles?
Well, exactly. But like, for instance, I had an old pickup truck I had there. The whole fuse box was corroded.
Rolled it out, yeah.
Yeah, and they had to take it apart and clean it all and put dielectric grease and the problem went away.
Yeah, so have them look at the electrician side of the business and look at the unfortunately, I don't have it with me. I was carrying it around in my bag for a while, a little tube of this product. And I'm thinking that we're going to be looking at doing things outside the box more and more because technology is just running.
Well, like dielectric grease is like one of the biggest things that you can,
use.
Keep plugs and connectors dry.
Yes, sir.
Or free of water, I should say. Excuse me.
Well, it's nice to talk to you this morning, Kirk, because I started off my automotive career in a heavy-duty truck industry working on Kenworth and Peterbilt. And I was just a little, I'm going to say a little fart, 17, 18 years old, with long blonde hair at the time. And I just was fascinated about how everything was like 6 times bigger than a regular car. So hats to you guys.
Now, though, it's becoming more, the problem is now you don't have that room anymore.
Yeah.
Everything's becoming more compact. Like to reach your arm in to change something, like I'm a big guy.
You're not getting behind the dash.
I can't. No. There's no space. Everything's so full of components.
Yes, sir.
Relays and everything. It's incredible.
And the labor rate goes up and up and up.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Kirk, thank you so much for calling in and sharing some experience with us because, we don't hear enough from different sides of the automotive industry because we're all connected, whether it's heavy duty trucks or it's automobiles. They share so much technology and I have big respect for all you heavy truck drivers on the roads. You go through a lot of baloney with regular car drivers and people need to give you a lot more room and a lot more respect.
Well, they don't realize something. That truck's on average, it's 80,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to come from, we're doing 100 kilometers an hour and we got to come to a stop in a hurry. Well, we'll plow right over top of you and it'll be like, that'll be it. Game over.
Game over. And Kirk, if people on the island of Montreal own it, it was delivered by a truck driver. Respect. Thank you so much, Kirk, for calling the CJD Car Show. Jimmy G in Master Control, pushing all the buttons, keeping me on the road. Father's Day is coming up, huh? Just saying. My name is Lisa Christensen. I'll be back next week with more of your cars and all of their problems. Drive safely, Montreal.